The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Hey folks, Bob here with this week's Bubble Genius Showcase item of the week. With Memorial Day coming up, what better way to celebrate than by buying a soldier a shower? Go to Bubble Genius right now and purchase either the Buy a Soldier Soap Set, the FUBAR Massive Military Bath Bar, or the Buy a Soldier a Powder. That's talc-free powder with tea tree oil and zinc oxide for extra absorbency. And Bubble Genius will ship your purchase directly to a soldier stationed overseas. Only $1, $12, or $7 each at BubbleGenius.com. But if you use our promo code Bob and Chez, that's B-O-B-A-N-D-C-H-E-Z, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now let's start the damn show.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Well, I never thought I would make it here today. I would be a great class president because I promised to put two new pop machines in the cafeteria, and I'm also going to get a glitter Bonnie Bell dispenser for all the girls' bathrooms. Oh, we're going to get new cheerleading uniforms. Anyway, I think I'd be a great class president, so who wants to eat chimichangas next year? Not me. See, with me, it will be summer all year long. Vote for summer.
Memorial Day weekend.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
It is Thursday, May 26, 2016, and this is the Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com. I am Bob Seska. That is Chez Pazienza sitting right over there.
Hey there.
Hi. We're brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. It's the best soap in the world. Buy a soldier a shower in just in time for Memorial Day weekend. Why don't you go and do it, please? We're also brought to you by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen. If you want free legal advice, and who doesn't want free legal advice? Go to thebowenlawgroup.com/Bob and Chez, or just click the link in the podcast page. It's as easy as that. And if you need more advice, if you need legal representation, no one better than Charles J. Bowen. Okay, big show today. I guess we're going to start out by saying happy Memorial Day weekend.
Memorial Day weekend.
The official kickoff is summer. I can't believe it again. It's here again. Again. That's when I just start sweating. Starting like Monday, Memorial Day weekend, the sweating begins and doesn't end until Labor Day. All right. First things first. So I guess the big story of the day, Chez, is the will there or will there not be a debate between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, and should there be or should there not be a debate between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders?
First of all, Trump stepped in it.
Yeah.
He totally stepped in it.
Yes.
Because he basically agreed to this thing on national television.
And now he's looking like a chicken
shit. But here's the thing, and this is something that I wrote today. Mm-hmm. He's actually in a better position than you'd expect.
Yeah.
Because I think that no matter what he does, he hurts Clinton. I think that if he backs out, he makes Bernie Sanders look fearsome. And that's something that can sow discord within the Democratic Party for months.
I don't know.
Past the convention.
I don't know. I think it makes him look like chicken. If he's afraid to debate Bernie Sanders, who regardless of whether debate takes place is not going to be the Democratic nominee. If he backs out and shies away from debating Bernie Sanders, who most of Trump's supporters believe is a communist, Birkenstock-wearing liberal from New England, then Donald Trump is going to look like a big orange-haired p***y.
He is. But again, remember the reaction that's going to have amongst the Bernie faithful.
Right. That's true.
That thing that you've been hearing about, look how much better Bernie's going to do than against Trump than Clinton. Mm-hmm. That is going to carry through for months.
Right.
That insanity is going to just carry through, and it's going to keep. I think it would probably carry through the convention and keep right on going.
I think the standards, though, for what people like in presidential debates certainly lean more toward Hillary Clinton as far as being, oh, like, who's the better debater?
Just, oh, I think you're right.
Because, yes, I mean, because she's more, I think, first of all, she's more recognizable. Second of all, she's got a much greater command of wonky details that always sound better in a debate, especially when contrasted against someone like Donald Trump, who doesn't have a goddamn idea of what a detail even is.
Right. So, no, I mean, Trump is completely lost. He is going to get, genuinely, without a doubt, he is going to get his ass handed to him by Hillary Clinton. And this is not even like a case of – this is not even – I mean, I don't think. This is not the kind of thing that we saw when it was Sarah Palin and Joe Biden.
Right.
Where what Sarah Palin did that was admittedly brilliant was she just basically read a script. And she kept, the script kept going for every answer she gave. She ignored the questions. And she just, you know what? You guys are trying to get me with your gotcha journalism. So I'm just going to say this other thing that I have completely prepared.
Right.
So that she doesn't trip on her own tongue and die.
Yeah, exactly. Who said that I have to answer your questions? Why can't I just say what I want to say?
That's it exactly.
Right.
Whereas Trump doesn't even have that amount of discipline.
Plus, you know, looking at this from the outside, looking at this as, I mean, putting yourself in big Republican clown shoes, looking at this from that perspective, it looks like Trump is walking into what would seem like a Democratic stunt. I mean, already the idea of a debate between Trump and someone who's not the Democratic nominee looks like a stunt. It looks like the Bill Nye versus whoever the creationist guy debate. It looks like one of these silly debates that always gets organized. There is never a clear winner. It's always just, here's my thing and blah, here's my thing too. And it ends up elevating the your ideas in the equation.
Sure.
And this thing may not come together
because first of all, they don't have very much time to do it.
Well, here's how it all came down. This started as a Young Turks thing.
Oh, I do. I totally do. I wrote that today. I said that before this even gained steam last night, Cenk Uygur was trying desperately to get these two together. These two crazy kids.
Right.
Literally crazy.
And we know what Cenk's motivation is. I mean, sure. What Cenk wants to do is he still wants to be able to influence the California primary. And so his calculus is, well, if we get Bernie up there debating Trump, then that's going to shift everything into Bernie's favor.
That is his thought process, yes. And it will also, because it's Cenk doing this, and we all know that Cenk has been a firm embracer of, what did I call him? I can't remember. I think I called him the living embodiment of the mind of the Bernie zombie hordes. You know, I mean, everything that they believe, he believes as well. And there's no denying that Cenk believes that if you were to get Trump and Bernie together, one of the things that they would do is they would both go after Clinton.
Right. But the only thing that works for Cenk in this equation is if the debate occurs before June 7th. And it's to me, sitting here on May 26th, it seems like a long shot to schedule a debate and get everything organized before June 7th. Then if it ends up getting pushed back beyond the California primary, it completely undermines the whole original idea of the debate.
It doesn't matter, right? This has a kill date.
Yeah, exactly. So what happened was the Young Turks wanted a debate between Hillary and Bernie. And something that originally I think they had agreed to, but maybe not with the Young Turks. They agreed to do a debate perhaps in May or early June, sometime before California. Hillary has since backed out. And I saw a video of the Young Turks talking about this. Cenk and Ben Mankiewicz are talking about how it was going to be a Young Turks, like the Young Turks were going to host the debate. I can only imagine ridiculous that would have been.
Can we pause for a second and just admire how utterly full of himself Cenk is.
Yeah, really.
To believe that the candidates for president of the United States should somehow stop off and pay him a little bit of tribute.
I know. Because of his YouTube. He's got a YouTube
channel.
That's
right, because he's huge. Everybody knows who he is.
Right.
Huge. He's huge. Everybody knows. Everybody knows who Anna Kasparian is.
Right. So that was the idea that Cenk was going to conduct a debate between Hillary and Bernie. And then Hillary backed out. Then Bernie suggested debating Trump. Then on Jimmy Kimmel last night, Trump accepted. By the way, we're going to play another clip from Kimmel, and I'm going to have to scold Jimmy Kimmel here just very briefly, as if he listens to the show, but you'll get the idea. So Trump accepted on Kimmel last night. Then Bernie tweeted something to the effect of game on. I seriously doubt the phrase game on is within Bernie's vernacular, but okay. And then Trump backed out, said he was joking. The Trump campaign said,
whoever runs Bernie's Twitter account went to him and well, it was honestly past his bedtime. So he didn't get an answer. He just threw it out there. Bernie was busy drinking Ovaltine.
So then what happened is Trump backed out, said he was just kidding. And then now it looks like Trump says that if they can raise $10 to $15 million for charity, that he'll do it. So this is put Trump gets in, Trump gets out. Trump gets in, Trump gets out.
It's right. It's more money he's going to give to the veterans.
Right. And then there's Bernie.
Excuse me, I'm talking.
Who's always in and just waiting to do this. Because I think, honestly, if this debate actually happens, this debate will gain some votes in California for Bernie Sanders. There's no two ways about it. Now, whether you agree it should happen or not is a different story. But if it does, then that's going to be, it's going to help Bernie Sanders and hurt Hillary Clinton in California. I think ultimately, though, in the long run, I mean, what we've known for weeks now is that it's the nomination is not going to be affected at all.
No, it's not going to be affected one bit. This thing is over.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea is to put, as I said before, the idea is to have this debate, get Bernie some extra votes in California, maybe swing some superdelegates. But it's a really, I mean, it's a swing for the fences that isn't going to come anywhere close to the fences, especially if the debate gets rescheduled, pushed back after June 7th, after the California primary, which means, you know, if they go, well, no, wait a minute, now that's after June 7th, it's not important. Well, then do you want to debate? Is the point the debate, or is the point to get more delegates, you know, and then the bluff is called and we'll see how that all plays out. But I don't really see it happening. Ultimately, I mean, I know what the impact will be, but whether or not it's actually going to happen seems like a long shot to me. And I think at some point, someone in the Trump campaign is going to, you know what, this is some stunt casting here. We shouldn't do this. We're focused on Hillary Clinton now, focused on the general election now. Let's look presidential. Fighting the guy, the second place guy, is going to be like, you know, when the Yankees would go to Japan and play the Japanese World Series champion or whatever and just completely annihilate them. Or like the Harlem Globetrotters versus the Washington Generals. That's the perception from the Trump. I'm not saying that's literally so Bernie Sanders support. I'm not saying that that Bernie's like the Washington Generals. I'm saying that's how Trump would perceive it. Yeah. And so ultimately, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I mean, yeah, look, Trump has obviously he's under no obligation to step into the quote unquote ring with the octagon with Bernie.
The octagon. Christ.
You could totally see Sanders, and, you know.
It's Rex Kwando in the octagon.
Come at me, bro.
Break the wrist, walk away. Break the wrist, walk away. Grab my arm. The other arm. Your other arm.
But I mean, love that scene. Were it to happen, it would be infuriating. It is infuriating that Bernie is so ready to jump at the chance because it hurts Clinton. It does. It has the potential to hurt Clinton. It just, you know, the whole idea why the Republicans or Donald Trump would do it would be to make Clinton look bad.
That's right.
That would be the one thing to get out of it. You know, that would be why they'd go for it.
I mean, even Salon, and for the most part, as someone who writes for Salon myself, I've witnessed this firsthand where there are quite a few writers for Salon who are in Bernie's camp, including writer Sean Ealing, who wrote an article today, published an article today in Salon saying, what the hell are you doing, Bernie? The Vermont senator inexplicably agrees to debate Donald Trump. And he's looking at it from a similar perspective as we are. It's just not, I don't think it's dignified.
Because Bernie is, it's dickish, it's petty, it's quite frankly narcissistic.
Right. Oh, yeah. You know? Sure.
I mean, I think that's what Bernie's thought process is. And by the way, I got to say this one more fucking time because it's really, really important. I am so anti-Bernie these days, but I didn't start out that way. Mm-hmm. I loved Bernie at the beginning of this whole process. I thought his voice was vital and to our politics, and I thought he was a really great guy. Even if I didn't agree with him on everything, I completely respected every single. Just him being around, him being a voice in Congress, I respected the crap out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've grown to dislike him through his behavior and the behavior of his more fanatical rabble-rousing followers whom he has done nothing to correct and has in fact encouraged over the past several months.
Yes, I'm still a big fan of Bernie Sanders politically. I think in terms of his campaigning, I've had some issues. I've been taken aback by some of Bernie's campaigning at the presidential level. But still, to me, that doesn't impact how I feel about Bernie on an issue basis or as a politician in general. I just, you know, I think he's surrounded by some guys, mainly Jeff Weaver, who, by the way, taking on Barbara Boxer at this point, talk about losing the narrative. Anyway, so, you know, it's obvious that Bernie has received some bad advice along the way. And I think that's hurt his campaign. It certainly hurt his campaign with people like me who otherwise would have supported him. And speaking of that, we're going to talk a little later in the show about Elizabeth Warren and Elizabeth Warren's fight with Donald Trump, which is getting increasingly entertaining and making me kind of circle back to a prediction I made about Elizabeth Warren being Hillary Clinton's vice presidential running mate. So we'll cover that in a little bit on the show. Plus, Donald Trump used some Native American slurs to describe Elizabeth Warren. I don't know if it's necessarily a slur.
No. It's not. I wouldn't say it's a slur. It's just it's a rude crack.
Yes, it's definitely a rude crack. Plus, we've got, oh my God, Trump. Trump used some of his best words about farmers in North Dakota.
So good.
Wait till you hear this quote. Sorry, yeah, I mean, I'm going to read the quote. I don't have the audio of the quote. I'm just going to read the quote. And then, speaking of best words, Louis Gohmert today went off on a rant about gay space colonists on the floor of the House of Representatives. So we're going to cover that in a little bit, and a whole lot more. I think we're going to talk about, oh my God, there was an explosive story in Talking Points Memo. At least Josh Marshall covered it for Talking Points Memo about the funding of Hulk Hogan's lawsuit against Gawker and where exactly all that money came from and how
hugely
utterly
important.
Yeah. How utterly dangerous and important this story actually is. Yes. So we're going to get to that too. Meanwhile, let's talk about, oh God damn, it's time to shave. Wouldn't it be funny if I just broke out my razor and my Harry's shave gel and just started shaving now on the show? Even with the five-blade German-engineered quality Harry's razors, I would just slice the hell out of my face. Because, of course, there's no mirror. You always need a mirror. And by the way, since it is summertime coming up right after Memorial Day, time to shave off those big goddamn Civil War beards. You hear me? I think so. Harry's offers a high-quality German-engineered shave that's better for your face and your wallet. It's about half the price of other big brands' blades, and they ship free to your front doorstep. Plus, bonus, you don't have to go to customer service counter and have them unlock those blades for you in the store. Or if you like going to one of the big box stores, for some reason they have them locked up on the rack, which is really weird. Why pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades when you can get them for half price at Harry's.com? They have a starter set, too, by the way. It's an amazing deal. For $15, you get a razor, moisturizing shave cream, and 3 razor blades with a money-back satisfaction guarantee. Stand up right now against overpriced store-bought blades in their protective glass display cases with Harry's razors. And don't forget, ladies, Harry's is perfect for your legs and your armpits. Go to Harry's.com, enter the promo code BANDC for $5 off your first Harry's shave. Plus, you'll be supporting the show by taking good care of your face or your legs with Harry's razors. That's HARRYS.com.
Summer music. Pow, pow, power.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
All right, welcome back to our Memorial Day weekend show. Thank you for joining us today and everywhere. Okay, moving along here. I really like, I mean, as far as the late night talk shows go, my favorite is Stephen Colbert. Second favorite has got to be Jimmy Kimmel.
I know where you're going to go with this.
Yeah.
And I agree with you.
Last night Trump was on with Jimmy Kimmel and they were talking about, he did something really clever. I give Jimmy Kimmel credit where credit is due. And I normally do. I think Jimmy Kimmel's effing hilarious, and his show is great, and it's the closest thing to Letterman. Obviously, Kimmel was a Letterman acolyte for most of his career, and so he's carried over some of that sense of humor into late night, and it's great. It's all good. But the Trump segment last night was, how do I put this? Problematic. It was, yeah, it was a lot of this. No, no, no. The good thing is he got Trump to talk about the whole John Miller thing, which was effing hysterical. He got Trump to admit to using aliases, among them the John Barron alias. So let's start this audio. Now, my problem will become evident as we start to listen through this audio.
Before we do this, remember that he denied it all of a week ago.
Right. Right. He had denied all of it. Never used an alias, never used the John Barron alias, never used the John Miller alias.
First time he'd ever heard it.
Yes. That was the first time he ever heard of the allegations in general. That's what we talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago. Completely backpedaling on the Kimmel show last night. But as we listen through this audio clip, listen to what to me is the fatal flaw that Jimmy Kimmel makes here, which is, and it's very subtle, but Jimmy Kimmel somehow manages to humanize Donald Trump. And that's bad. Here we go.
I don't think you're taking credit for this. And this is something that I think is brilliant. And I know what your official position on this is, but let's, you know, just forget them for a second. That call with that People magazine reporter, that guy who sounded like you calling and going, yeah, and then Trump did this.
It didn't sound like me, though, really. You know, you think that sounded like me?
Yeah.
I don't.
You know how people hear their voice and they don't think their voice sounds like their voice?
You know, it was 28. And by the way, the reporter came back and said, I think Trump gave out the tape. Give me a break. From 28 years ago.
Yeah, why would you give out that tape?
They felt that it wasn't my voice and they didn't want to have the liability. But, you know, honestly, I discussed this the other night on Hannity's show, and it was really a very good discussion. And check it out. But I will say this.
Uh-huh.
To me, that didn't sound like my voice.
It didn't. Yeah, well, nobody sounds like themselves when they hear themselves. You go, oh.
No, see, no. I mean, yes, sometimes people hear their own voice played back to them, and it doesn't sound like them. That's just the way it goes. Audio recordings, for as long as there have been audio recordings.
Credit where credit is due. He's playing him brilliantly.
He really is.
Because he's exposing something that is an absolute fact about Trump. Right. And that is that all you have to do to get him to do what you want is to compliment him.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah, because then he starts playing along. Oh, this is great. I'm safe.
He can't help it. Yeah. He can't help but take credit for any compliment you pay him.
That's right.
He has to. Mm-hmm. You could tell him seriously, he could gun down an entire fucking family and you could say to him, you know what, honestly, look at those shots. Those shots are perfect through the head. Those are just, whoever did this was absolutely amazing. And because this must have been, they must have been shot. I mean, I think forensics and ballistics are telling us they were shot from like yards away. To be able to get those perfect shots, that's incredible. Whoever did this, they're stupendous. They're a marksman. And he just would say, all right, it was me. It was me. Because I am,
exactly.
Because you know I'm a very good shot. And you know what? You know another thing? They were moving too. The kids, the little kids, they were running around and I managed to hit them right between the eyes because that's, you know, I'm honestly a very, very, very good shot.
I'm a tremendous shot. Jesus Christ.
Well, that's me. But to me, it sounded just like you.
Really?
Yeah.
30 years.
And if it was you, I think it was a very funny thing to do, to call a guy and take him through the ringer.
Well, you
like
know,
that.
Over the years, I've used alias. And when
there
I'm
it is. Over the years, I've used aliases.
He's so perfect.
Yeah.
God, he's so fucking predictable.
He just draws him right out, doesn't he? And God only knows. You imagine Trump in the setting of a heated summit meeting with, Vladimir Putin, for example.
Well, Putin's already figured it out. He's already done it.
Yeah.
He has already complimented Trump, and because of that, Trump comes back with, I think Putin's very smart. He's a very, very good guy. I mean, Jesus Christ, all it would take is Putin saying something nice about Trump's hands.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, we turn over our entire nuclear arsenal.
That's right. You know, by the way, Donald, you've got great looking hands there. Oh, yeah, thank you. They're tremendous hands. They're very, very masculine hands.
Yeah, you think Bush looking into Putin's soul was bad? Holy crap.
Right.
And especially when I was out in Brooklyn with my father and I'd want to buy something. And honestly, nobody knew who Trump was at that time. Nobody knew me, so it wasn't so much so important. But I would never want to use my name because you had to pay more money for the land. If you're trying to buy land, you use different names.
What names would you use?
I actually used the name Barron, and I ended up using my son because I made a very good deal using that name. I used an alias in terms of setting up a meeting with Mr. Donald Trump. And it was, and many
Jesus
people.
Jesus Christ, listen to him. He's so easy. He's so, so dumb.
He calls up to whoever he's doing the deal with real estate. He says,
John Barron here. I'm setting up a meeting here with Donald Trump. He's a very, very good guy. He's a tremendous guy. He's got great hair, big hands.
You know what Trump is? Trump is the perfect perfect defendant on like Law and Order or one of those legal shows where the attorney just goes at him and eventually draws him out because it's so easy to draw him out.
Right.
All you got to do is in the immortal words of Tom Cruise, what is it he wants to tell us about it?
Yeah.
He wants to say it. He wants to admit the code red. All you got to do is get him to brag.
Yeah.
That's it. Because there's nothing he wants to talk about more than himself and how great he is.
How likely is it that you could draw out Donald Trump by doing the rabbit season, duck season thing?
Sure.
Rabbit season, duck season, no rabbit season, no duck season, no rabbit season, rabbit season, yes, rabbit season.
And by the way, you know what? You're great at rabbit season. Oh, yeah, well, you know, rabbit season, definitely, rabbit season. I am. I'm tremendous at rabbit season.
But see, from here, though, it really sounds like, oh, we're getting up close and personal with Donald Trump. Oh, his formative years, cutting deals.
I got to give him f***ing credit.
That's true.
I got to give Kimmel credit because actually what he's doing is astonishingly subversive.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's really, really smart. In fact, it's something that Stephen Colbert used to do as the Stephen Colbert character during his interviews that we don't see anymore. We don't get to see that character anymore. So I'm glad there's someone at least doing some sort of jujitsu with guys like Trump and exposing them by lulling him into a false sense of security, which is exactly what Kimmel did.
Well, sure, because he can't just be mean to him. That's not going to work. It's just all that's going to do is pick a fight.
Yeah.
But you know what? Again, I didn't hear this interview before this. All I read about the, I watched a little tiny bit about the debate.
Yeah.
But what he's doing here is really, really clever. Because I had the same fear that you did. When you mentioned that we were going to do this, the very first thing that I thought is like, all right, Kimmel probably just was, quite frankly, Fallon. You know, nobody can help it. Whenever he gets on one of these talk shows, everybody just treats him like he's a normal person. And that's something that has bothered me, whether it's pop culture or the media or whatever. Since his ascendancy, I hate the idea that anyone will treat this guy, will normalize him. Mm-hmm. Because he doesn't deserve to be, like you said, normalized or humanized. Because he's a fucking monster.
Yeah.
I mean, and so I'm liking what Kimmel's doing here, though.
Yeah, but I think if you're not really up to date or up to speed on the story of the John Miller phone call.
No, it looks bad.
Yeah, it makes Trump look like a decent guy. Like he's just talking through how he used to make deals and oh, he's going to mention his son and how great his son is here in a little bit. It just humanizes him. And I guess that's the price you pay for cornering Donald Trump. He starts to look like he's got actual blood running through his orange veins.
Yeah.
So let's continue here.
The real estate business do that. You use alias and you have to, frankly. Uh-huh. Otherwise they find out it's you and they charge you more money and nobody wants to pay more money.
When you name a kid Barron, does that put a lot of pressure on him to become a Barron?
Well, he's a little Barron. That one is a little Barron, I will tell you.
Is he really?
He's a good boy.
Do you drive him to school and do those kinds of things?
I have.
Here. Now that's what I'm talking about right there.
That's a buzzer.
Yeah.
I have. I love doing it.
Do you play games with him?
I play games all the time.
Do you ever let him win on these games?
No, I try and defeat him at all.
Crush his spirit. Right.
I want him to win.
As
you know, with your children, by the way. My children have done very well, and I have great children, and five great children, and I want them to be successful.
Sure.
I want them to do really well. I mean, that's the whole deal with your children. I have friends that are very successful, and they actually don't like seeing their son or daughter do better than them. There aren't too many when that happens. well, they're not very good fathers and they're not very good parents, but I've seen many, many people where they want to, you know, they're so competitive with their children.
If
they don't
one
want
of your kids ran against you for president.
Okay, yeah, that's enough of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's okay. Now he's gone off, you know.
Not good. Just a bit of this right here for the ending part of the last half of that segment.
9999999
No. Thank you, no. We don't need to hear about how Donald Trump plays board games with his children. I mean, you get the sense.
When he's not trying to have sex with his daughter.
Exactly right. All right, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Donald Trump and his best words about farmers in North Dakota. Yes, this is worth sticking around for. So hang out. We'll be back right after this. Hello, it's Bob to tell you about our Patreon page. You might be asking yourself, what the hell is a Patreon page? It's a website where you can help support our podcast by donating money to the show. You can sign up for $1, $5, $10, or $15 per month. Or if you're filthy rich, you can sign up for more. In exchange, we'll bring you exclusive Patreon-only content like our post-mortem shows, memberships to the after party, and commercial-free unbleeped versions of our free show. And if we reach our crowdfunding goal, we'll bring you new shows every weekday. That's patreon.com/Bob and Chez, or click the Patreon link at bobseska.com. Let's do this thing.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
The second half of today's show is brought to you by the bobseska.com Amazon link. If you want to go shopping right now, what fun would that be? You're listening to the show, you go to bobseska.com, you click the Amazon link, you buy lots of cool stuff, and in the process, you're helping to support the show because we get a small commission from everything you buy. It costs you nothing and helps support us. So thank you in advance for doing that. All right, so moving along, this quote caught my mind. I saw this come down on Twitter today. As we know, Trump has all of the best, and he's got the very, very best words.
I know words. I had the best words.
He has the best words. Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, she doesn't have her own words. Donald Trump, he not only has his own words, but he's got the best words.
I know words. I had the best words.
They're the best.
And Hillary Clinton doesn't have her own words.
I know. She doesn't. This is why she's got to use a teleprompter, because she doesn't have any words. Too bad. No words for Hillary Clinton. So sad. When is Hillary Clinton going to go out and find some words? You know, maybe there's a dictionary convention coming up. Merriam-Webster can maybe donate some words to Hillary. So therefore, she would have some words.
Yeah, if only she had some words.
I mean, for a dollar a day. I should bring up the Sarah McLachlan music. For a dollar a day, you too can support Hillary Clinton by sending her a dollar and some words.
Some words.
Some words.
Words, words.
Words. By the way, I couldn't find that goddamn Beavis and Butthead clip. I wanted to find it for you for today's show. I couldn't find it anyway.
Yeah, I know. I looked on YouTube and it doesn't exist. Although they do have one where Butthead says, thinking sucks.
It's exactly. So here's what Donald Trump had to say at a stump speech in North Dakota. This was, I believe, earlier today. He said, by the way, while we're here in North Dakota, I have to say this. I love the farmers, and the farmers are incredible. We have to remember this was largely a farm state, and they produce tremendous crops of tremendous different goods, of which I eat a lot of them. And I just want to pay my respects to the farmers of North Dakota because they have done a great job.
Wow.
Yes, the Republican nominee for president just said, I love the farmers, and the farmers are incredible. We have to remember this was largely a farm state, and they produce tremendous crops of tremendous different goods, of which I eat a lot of them.
It's amazing.
That's not even the best words.
I know words. I had the best words.
Those words aren't even arranged to form a coherent sentence. They produce tremendous crops of tremendous different goods, of which I eat a lot of them. Jesus Christ. All right, so up next here. I want to talk about, just for a second, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I know Debbie... That's... You know, I'm going to rename this sound effect. I'm just going to rename that sound effect Debbie Wasserman Schultz because she's not a tremendous person. She's not a tremendous person, I'm telling you, in the Democratic Party right now. And I think for good reason. I think she's been kind of a disaster. She hasn't been able to really run an effective campaign outside of this one, which, as we all know, I think, you know, and this is just my theory. I have no evidence to back this up, so I just want to make sure that perfectly clear that I think before the Democratic campaign started, before Hillary Clinton even got into the race, that she cut a deal with the DNC to make sure that 2008 didn't happen all over again. It may seem crooked, it may seem rigged, but at the end of the day, it's basic politics. You smooth the way for your political ambitions, and that's what I believe theoretically Hillary Clinton did. But suffice to say, they're talking about right now of dropping Debbie Wasserman Schultz as the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Now, while I do think she has to go, I don't think she should go now. I think maybe there's a possibility that if they change horses midstream, right in the middle of a presidential campaign, that her replacement could be better. I mean, I could see like them maybe offering Howard Dean to come back or something like this. Of course, this would be President Obama's decision to make ultimately. I don't think President Obama's going to do anything about it. But, you know, needless to say, if they do replace her, there's the possibility that it could be someone better. But that's a big roll of the dice right in the middle of a presidential campaign. I think she's already put infrastructure in place. She's got a staff in place. She's moving forward. They're planning for the convention. To get rid of Debbie Wasserman Schultz right now would obviously be cathartic, I think, in many ways. But happening now is just a big mistake because it would undermine everything that's been built so far on the Democratic side. And certainly it would end up possibly creating some chaos at the convention as well. And that's something that we don't need. Quite frankly, getting rid of her now and the people who are calling for Debbie Wasserman Schultz to be fired right now, it just seems like the timing is wrong, and therefore it's self-defeating. It's something that I think would end up... let's put it this way. You just don't want to risk anything. I mean, in a contest that the stakes are this high, you don't want to take the chance that, you know, kind of messing with the Democratic power structure, you don't want to take that chance because the repercussions of it have the potential to be quite serious, knowing the potential of a Donald Trump presidency. So keep going, you know, right after the election, feel free to fire Debbie Wasserman Schultz. We can get to start anew with someone else and they can start planning for the midterms, etc. But for the time being, I think she's got to stay there. So that's my two cents about Debbie Wasserman Schultz and whether or not she should stay or go at this point.
Yeah, I think it's a terrible idea to screw with anything at this point.
That's right. So there was this other story that I want to cover before we take a break. And it was, I learned about it through Josh Marshall at Talking Points Memo. And this speaks directly to, I think, a lot of what we've been seeing, a trend that we've been seeing emerging over the last 40 years, but really maybe coming into focus very clearly, believe it or not, with this Hulk Hogan lawsuit against Gawker. This is bad.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, again, Gawker isn't my favorite website in the world. I've seen some things on there that I found entertaining. I'm not using Gawker as a news source. I think it was irresponsible of Gawker to publish the Hulk Hogan sex tape, as entertaining as it might have been. As a journalist, it's probably not the smartest decision. Obviously, it's cost them now maybe upwards of $115 million to do it. Plus, what did it really gain them? Certainly not that amount of revenue, that's for sure.
No.
But the fact of the matter is that it came out in a New York Times interview with Gawker owner Nick Denton that there are perhaps some Silicon Valley libertarian big money guys who are financing some of these lawsuits, some of these frivolous lawsuits, specifically Donald Trump supporters. Now that brings us to a guy named Peter Thiel. He's a Silicon Valley billionaire, and he's a self-identified libertarian.
Yeah, and, surprise.
Yeah, and he has reportedly sunk millions upon millions of dollars in support of Hulk Hogan against Gawker.
Not just Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, not just Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, he is what he did, and this is absolutely terrifying when it comes to how chilling it is of the press.
Yeah.
He has basically I think I jokingly called him the Amy Dunn of like billionaires from Gone Girl. Because he was injured, you know, he felt injured, and then he just waited.
Yeah.
He waited to seek his revenge. He planned this thing out for months into years. And what he did is he was outed by Gawker. He was very unhappy about that. And so he hired a bunch of lawyers because he's got more money than God. He hired a bunch of lawyers and he had them go through various stories that Gawker wrote to find ones where there might be a case against Gawker. And he contacted the plaintiffs, or he contacted the people the stories were about, and basically said, I will fund this case. So he bought plaintiffs and he sunk a ton of money into hitting Gawker from all sides.
Yeah.
And that's really, really scary, because what essentially you're seeing is, whether you like Gawker or not, that's a billionaire targeting a private media company.
That's right.
And essentially trying to shut it down. Now, I know you and I always say that the First Amendment is reserved for the government, you know, stopping the government from censoring a news organization or, you know, the press. But this is honestly pretty close to that. Mm-hmm. Shutting down. Literally shutting down a news outlet that has printed something that you disagree with, that's a real problem. And the thing about Peter Thiel is that he has kind of shown them the way, shown other billionaires the way, when it comes to, look, if you've got enough money and you play your cards right and you do what I have done here with this sort of roadmap I've given you, you can shut down media organizations
right.
that print stuff that you consider unfavorable.
Yep. Exactly. And that's exactly what's going on here. Now, it started out with Denton sort of hypothesizing that someone was bankrupt, some wealthy anti-Gawker multimillionaire was bankrolling Hulk Hogan's lawsuit against Gawker. And then Forbes confirmed it and discovered that it was Peter Thiel. And he's the co-founder of PayPal. Who do we also know who's one of the founders of PayPal? Pierre Omidyar. Also, and this never really occurred to me, the Peter Thiel, Gawker, Pierre Omidyar connection here. That's something that Glenn Greenwald used to do as a lawyer.
You bury them in paperwork so that they
exactly
they basically. And that's the important thing to remember here. You know, I had somebody, I was talking about this, and I had somebody come back with, well, you know what? If this is good because it will. It was Justin. I think it was Justin Rosario, who I like very much. And his argument, and it's not a bad one, was that it could be good because it could teach sort of internet journalists who have become notoriously lax that they need to make sure they seal up every story.
That's right.
But I'm like, but that's not what the problem is, because they don't have to win. All they have to do is bury you in paperwork and bury you in legal bills incurred.
Yep.
Bury you in billable hours, and that's it.
By the way, it's not illegal for an outside entity to help fund another party's lawsuit.
Yeah.
So you get these billionaires. Peter Thiel is a billionaire. Yeah. He's worth $2.7 billion. He's got money to piss away. I mean, he could give away, he could give you, Chez, he could give you a check for $1 billion, and he would still have $1.7 billion.
I wish he'd do that.
I mean, that's...
I don't need $1 billion. I need, like, you know what? Honestly, if somebody gave me like $100,000, I'd be happy.
Yeah. I mean, talk about a chilling effect. It turns out that maybe the main censorship body in the United States could end up being libertarian billionaires.
Yeah. Yep.
Libertarian billionaires who...
And by the way, yeah, billionaires who are very... The Silicon Valley libertarians, very used to getting what they want.
That's right.
Very used to remaking the world in their image.
Jesus Christ. And they're all frivolous lawsuits. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe Hulk Hogan had a case. I mean, obviously this is a bit of gray area between what is, you know, in the public interest and what isn't, as far as journalism goes. But the fact of the matter is that this could turn out to be a lot like what Trump does, which is a long series of frivolous lawsuits, which then also calls into question the Republican campaign for tort reform, which, you know, the Republican Party, you know, for which Donald Trump is the nominee, is always and has always been against trial lawyers and against frivolous lawsuits. And here they are financing all of these lawsuits to basically shut down journalism outlets. So we'll see. We'll see how that all plays out. But that was just a terrifying story. Like, I can't even imagine if some Silicon Valley billionaire decided that the Daily Banter didn't strike him or her the right way, right, and then just decided to sue.
And then he spent $37 to sink the Daily Banter.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Or the least money he ever spent.
Or for that matter, this podcast could get sued by someone like this, and we would have no recourse whatsoever.
And that would cost $36.
$36. All right, one last break. Back with more show after this. Louis Gohmert right after this.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Memorial Day weekend.
This is the Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Just in the interest of full disclosure, Gawker outed Peter Thiel in 2007. So, you know, he's maybe, on the road. Maybe a little pissed.
Nobody. That's what I mean. He's Amy
Dunn.
Yeah. He doesn't just let it go. You got to give him some credit.
So he's using the Hulk Hogan suit to get back at Gawker, and Jesus Christ. I mean, if they lose their appeal, $115 million. That'd be it for Gawker, I think, wouldn't it? They had to sell. I mean, in order to, I think they had to cover $50 million, was it? They had to put in escrow because of the ruling, and then they had to sell off part of Gawker to some German conglomerate.
Yeah,
in order to be able to pay for it.
I think the other thing that bothers me is whether you like Gawker or not, they are a private media company. Mm-hmm. They are an independent media company, and the idea that they could be sunk by this, I think is really, really disturbing. Because one of the things that Peter Thiel did is he fed this case, he fed Hogan and Hogan's legal team so much money that they didn't have to, and they basically, I'm sure at Thiel's request, they refused to take any kind of settlement. They refused to take, you know, they refused to back down in any way.
Oh my
and
God.
You have to ask yourself, all right, really what? How much damage was genuinely done to Hogan,
yeah,
and how much does he deserve?
Mm-hmm. Right, and all you need to do to get a sense of how that is if you've ever been sued, for that matter, or if you've ever gone through a divorce, for that matter, the idea of someone refusing to settle, refusing to take the sensible, logical path out of the entire thing is just horrifying. I mean, it's the most horrifying feeling in the world that it is just, there's no way to reason that you're just going to have to continue hemorrhaging money. And it's not going to end until it ends at, you know, at the tune of, in this case, $115 million or more. So anyway, so let's move on here before we wrap up the show. I want to talk about Louis Gohmert. Louis Gohmert went off on same-sex marriage again from the floor of the House of Representatives. This is comes to us courtesy of the fine folks doing yeoman's work at Right Wing Watch. Louis Gohmert is concerned about gay space colonies. This would actually be, in all seriousness, this would be sort of a variation of his gay island scenario. If you recall the gay island scenario, this is if the last humans on Earth were all trapped on an island, but it was only gay people, then all the humans would then end up dying off because they couldn't procreate. That's their winning argument. That's the argument they've decided to go with. Now, Louis Gohmert...
He does realize that as long as there's a man and a woman there, gay or not, they will propagate the species.
That's right. Gay men still make sperm if they're healthy men.
Right. As if gay men are just going to go, ooh, a vagina, I'm not doing that, when they're the last people on Earth.
Yeah, I mean, gay people often father children by donating sperm to surrogates, etc.
Yes.
Gay women get sperm donors to provide them with sperm. And it's just, this thing goes on all the time.
I think it's safe to say that they would take one for the team.
Exactly.
Were that to happen.
To perpetuate the human race, I think they would. I think they would. So here's Louis Gohmert laying out the gay space colony.
I mean, I really wonder how many people in this body who had the ultimate power to decide whether humanity would go forward or not, whether it was an asteroid coming, something that would end humanity on Earth as dinosaurs were ended at one time.
Yeah, one time, 4,000 years
ago. Exactly, yes, exactly.
And by the way, I can't help but to hear Louis Gohmert's voice and think of this music. Okay, let's hear a little bit more from Congressman Asparagus.
Okay, we've got a spaceship that can go, as Matt Damon did in the movie, plant a colony somewhere. We can have humans survive this terrible disaster about to befall. If you could decide what...
Oh my God, this is so horrible. This is a sitting member of the U.S. House of Representatives, and he can't even get his metaphor right. He's just looping in Matt Damon in the movie The Martian, and he's just completely getting flummoxed. He's getting lost in the depths of his own tall grass.
You could decide what 40 people you put on the spacecraft that would save humanity. How many of those would be same-sex couples?
Just listen to this. Listen to this fucking insane scenario he's had to concoct in that pea brain of his.
Yeah,
argue against gay marriage or argue against homosexuality.
That's right. Now, imagine now if suddenly aliens came down to Earth like the movie Independence Day. Now, if it was the only remaining people on Earth that were Jeff Goldblum and Judd Nelson, how would they make more... Wait a minute. So it's the aliens... I'm confused with my own metaphor. The aliens and then Jeff Goldblum and Judd Nelson need to procreate...
But what would happen? What would happen if a probe came back that centuries ago had spoken to gay people, and Louis Gohmert had his way, and all gays were wiped off the earth, and so it started evaporating our oceans?
Yeah.
And then the Starship Enterprise would have to go back in time to San Francisco in the 1980s, where, what do you know, there are a hell of a lot of gay people there. And bring gay people back from 1980s San Francisco so that the probe would have something to talk to, so it would stop sucking up the oceans like a giant thing that sucked a c-.
Jesus Christ.
You're wanting to save humankind for posterity. Basically a modern-day Noah. You have that ability to be a modern-day Noah. You can preserve life. How many same-sex couples would you take from the animal kingdom and from humans?
From the animal kingdom?
Animal kingdom.
What?
Holy sh**. We're having this real problem with gay mosquitoes. God, this, how is this fucking idiot in Congress?
That's the name of today's show. Gay what? Mosquitoes.
Yeah, how in the hell is it possible? How did this freaking moron wind up in Congress?
That's a really good question. Well, we got another 20 seconds of Louis Gohmert, and we've run out of time. So maybe we'll play a little bit more of the brilliant Louis Gohmert.
You know what I think? You know what I think the better question would be?
What's
if Louis Gohmert was only the last person on Earth with another man,
yeah,
would he have sex with him?
Now, that's a good question. It all depends whether or not we have a spaceship that goes to Mars. Whether or not that spaceship involves Sulu, but if Sulu is on the spaceship, that means there's three men left. Now, wait a minute. Sulu is gay, so
yeah, look,
therefore...
the Federation knew enough to send a gay man into space.
Right. It seems like Louis Gohmert's working out his metaphor as he's talking about it. He's like, well, then there's... What about Matt Damon? I mean, he could be gay, but then he's really awesome in the Jason Bourne movies and is... Now, if Matthew McConaughey visited the Matt Damon from The Martian, even though he was also in Interstellar, that movie, remember that movie? I remember the meme of Matthew McConaughey crying in front of the TV. That was a funny one.
No, he's blocked out that. He's blocked out Interstellar because it involves climate change.
Right. He's just mixing his movies up and getting confused over Matt Damon characters and on and on and on. Okay, if you want to listen to the Postmortem Show, sign up at patreon.com/Bob and Chez. Really easy to do. All you got to do is go to bobseska.com and click the Patreon link. Because Patreon is a weird word, you know. Sign up at the $5 level. You get 2 Postmortem Shows a week. We run them continuously right after we're done talking on the free show. We start talking and it's the Postmortem Show. So if you're signed up at $15 and you get the $15 a month and you get the commercial-free, not safe for work version of the show, the Postmortem Show happens seamlessly right at the end. So you don't have to download 2 files. All right, that's coming up next. We'll see you over there. Bye-bye.